This is Journeys of Empowerment, a space where lived experiences meet bold leadership and transformation starts with truth. I'm Michiel Suchitrijd, and here we don't do small talk. We ignite what's real and what's next. Before we dive in, a quick shout out to our sponsor, Neotopia. Operations leads know the drill. You roll out new processes, stack on training, tighten KPIs, and still something doesn't stick. The truth? It's rarely the process. It's behavior. Neotopia helps you to solve that gap. In the awareness workshop, you'll discover why solid processes often break down in execution, why learning fades instead of lasting, and how to build teams that own behavior, not just follow the rules. Because change that drains your people won't last. But change that shifts behavior moves everyone forward. Ready to lead differently? Visit neotopia.nl. Some careers follow a roadmap. Others are built by those who dare to redraw the map entirely. In this episode, I had the chance to speak with Simone Mink, product operations lead at Mendix, and a self-described rebel with a cause. Her journey from leisure management to tech leadership isn't just non-linear. It's a masterclass in owning your path. We explored how a creative thesis at the zoo led to a career in low-code. The hard lessons burnout taught her about energy and self-worth. What it means to show vulnerability on stage and in life. And how she's building space for neurodivergent voices in tech. Simone reminds us, you don't need permission to take up space. You already belong. And she leaves us with a call to courage. Everything you've ever dreamed of. All right, here we are live in the studio, Journeys of Empowerment with Simone Mink. Welcome.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day and I'm happy to be here.
Happy to have you here. Simone, we met at the, I think, Upstream Festival in Rotterdam only a year ago. And you were having a conversation, sitting down with Farzan from Team Human AI. And we briefly met and I thought like, okay, someday I looked you up. We got linked at LinkedIn and then I started my podcast. So I'm going a little bit fast now, but I started the podcast. And along the way, you came on my radar multiple times while being on stage and advocate. And if I think about you, and I just mentioned it, it's a sort of rebel with a cause. And I thought, okay, if at one point I had to invite you to unpack that, well, rebel with a cause in you. So I became utterly curious about you. So welcome. And
thanks.
Let's first start with what are you doing right now? And it's always an interesting question. Who are you?
That's a very deep one.
Yes.
Well, shall we start with what I do for a living?
Yeah.
That's the easy one.
Yeah.
So I work at Mendix, a low-code software company. I'm there in my fifth role. I've been there for 10 years almost. And I'm currently, well, my title is product operations lead, but I'm responsible for making sure that our product organization runs smoothly, designing and implementing product strategy processes, and making sure that we have the right conversations cross-departmentally as well with our growth and go-to-market organizations, that so that we can make the right decisions, the right bets on where we want to go with our product. So not making the decisions myself, but facilitating that process.
And what does the product do?
So Mendix is a low-code platform, which means that companies can build applications, mostly enterprise applications, without having to know how to actually write code. So it's very visual. We always compare it a little bit with Lego, like you have building blocks that you can just click together. You can code if you want to, like you can extend the platform. If you know how to code, you can, but you don't have to. So it's really unlocking or democratizing software development.
And How did it all start? How did you end up in tech? Are you a techie?
Well, yes, absolutely. I've been in tech for 15 years, so I would definitely say I'm a techie. I didn't study anything tech related. So I studied leisure management after a couple of failed attempts at other degrees. And I thought, I don't know what I want to do. And leisure management seems like the broadest, most generic option right now. So I'll just go with that. And I really enjoyed that studies. I mean, I don't want to hate on it too much. But I graduated at Rotterdam Zoo. So I wrote a thesis on digitalization of education in the zoo.
Digitalization and education in the zoo.
Yes. So this is 2011. Back then, there was only one zoo in the entire world that had an app with smart gaming features, and that was Taronga Zoo in Sydney. And we basically developed a concept for Rotterdam Zoo to adopt a similar strategy, where children could walk around the zoo and learn about animals and their habitat through their mobile phone. Mm. It was revolutionary. They never
back
built
then.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. They never built it, but
still revolutionary.
Still revolutionary. I think we were a little bit too early for Rotterdam Zoo for them to adopt it. But we did write that thesis, me and my partner at the time, a thesis partner. Mm-hmm. And through that, we got connected to a small web company in Rotterdam as a technical advisor. Because we didn't know anything about tech, right? And I was always that kid that was super creative. I drew a lot in my life, like portraits. And I was always the one in the hogeschool, so at my school, that would design the logos and that would make the reports. And like I was the unreliable with deadlines, but crazy creative kid. So they saw some of my work and they called me. I think it was at 10 p.m. on a Tuesday or Wednesday night. I was walking the dog with my mom in my pajamas, and I got a call from Niels, the owner of that company, and said, listen, Simone, can you come to Boudoir, a bar in Rotterdam? Because we want to make you an offer. I was like, okay, well, give me 20 minutes. I need to get dressed, but I'll be there. And so I arrive at Boudoir, we have a conversation, and they offer me a job as a web designer at their company. Mm-hmm. And I didn't immediately say yes. I did, of course, I have to think about it. I went back home, discussed it with my mom, who was very anxious about it all. She's like, oh, what if you fail? What if you can't do this? Da, da, da. I said, well, then I still have my degree. Like, I can always fall back on that leisure management bachelor degree.
Broad degree.
Yeah.
Very broad.
Yeah, business administration. Yeah. I could have done anything. But what if I succeed? And that's what I thought. Like, what if this does work out? This could be really cool. So I took that job. And a month later, Niels asked me, hey, would you also like to learn how to code? I was like, yeah.
Why not?
Why not? Got nothing to lose, right? I mean, worst case scenario, I find out that I'm really bad at this. And then I say, okay, I'll go back to designing. And I started coding first, like just HTML, CSS, and then quickly we added JavaScript and PHP to the mix. And I think within 3 months I was building websites like with a backend system, by myself. And I just fell in love with tech, I think instantly. And I've never looked back.
It's interesting, with a sort of creative mindset and then diving deep into tech. What do you think was the reason why you dove so deep into it? Was it the creation or was it the possibility or what was the reason for getting drawn into it?
I think there's multiple reasons. First of all, I've for the first time in my life had a very vivid feeling of, oh, I'm good at this and I like this, right? Like I'd always been that kid that was a little bit searching for what I wanted. And this just like
clicked
instantly. So there's definitely, that was a big factor. Puzzles. Mm. Like basically writing code is like solving a puzzle. You're trying to, especially when you're learning how to code, you're trying to figure it out. How does it work? And my brain just really enjoys that. Yeah.
You thrive at doing puzzles. Are you puzzling, by the way, in physical form or not?
Not, no. Although I did it like recently and then I thought, oh, I really, really like this.
I clicked again.
Yeah. But I've always been more of an online person, like a gamer. But I recently did a legpuzzle. I don't know how you say that in English, but an actual like board puzzle.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is really fun. I could start doing this. Yeah. But I do Lego.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of Lego at home. So those are the more physical puzzles for
it's
me.
Maybe also the reason why Mendix is clicking so much. Yeah? The Lego building blocks click in it.
Yeah, for sure.
And then how did your career progress further?
So the first, I think, 5 years of my career, I was a software developer.
Yeah.
So I moved from like Nielsen's small company to a little bit bigger company. And then I ended up at Coolblue, which most people know, as a software developer there. And I think about 2 years in at Coolblue, and I started falling out of love with coding. As heartily and madly as I fell in love with it when I first got introduced to it, with the same rate, which I think is very typical for me as a person as well, I fell out of love with coding. And then I thought, I want to do something different. I want to work more with people because I really like people and I like enabling people. And I want to stay in tech, but I just don't want to sit behind a computer anymore 40 hours a week. And I definitely don't want to write code anymore. And, I think a very lucky break. A recruiter found me for a position at Mendix as a tech trainer.
Mm.
And I'd never delivered a training before in my life, but I thought, well,
let's give it a try.
Let's give it a try. Yes. And I interviewed for that position. I was so scared.
Of course.
Yeah. They asked me to develop a training based on Mendix. So a Mendix low-code training.
Based on your extensive, long history in building trainings, right? So, yes. Of course, piece of cake.
Yeah, and then also with Mendix, which wasn't like, it works differently than traditional coding, right? So even with my technical background, I was like, I don't understand how this thing works. Like, so I was set, I think, an hour before I had to leave for that interview. I was still set in my house behind my computer. I just had a shower. I sat in my towel, like, looking at a white screen, panicking, like, oh, I have nothing.
Nothing.
I have nothing. And I thought, for a brief moment, like, I'm going to cancel this job interview because I can't do this. And then I thought back to my interviewing experience with Coolblue, because actually I applied at Coolblue twice. The first time they turned me down because I was too junior and they didn't have a junior position at the time. But they said they really liked me as a person. They thought I was a good culture fit. So a year later, I applied again. And then they almost immediately, they were like, oh, welcome back.
Cool.
Here's a contract.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, I've done that before. Like, that's my experience. And if I don't go, for sure, they'll never want to see me again. But if I go and I don't do that great, they may still like me. And they may give me another opportunity in the future. So I went and I used a training on feedback that I had like gotten myself at Coolblue, like, I don't know, 2 months before that. And I just made up whatever from memory. And I delivered that training and they offered me the job.
Did you get specific feedback on as to what you presented also?
So they hired
you, of course, that's obvious. But did they hire you for the high quality presentation on the training or because of something else? What do you think?
Well, the only thing I remember from that conversation is that they had like a couple of other candidates, and like one of them had like 7 years of experience in tech training. And what they said is, we can teach you how to deliver training. We can teach you how Mendix works. We cannot teach them how to have your energy.
Mm. Here you go.
Yeah.
Very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, and I think one of the most important ingredients for delivering an engaging presentation or training is energy and the transference of the way you transfer your energy to the audience, right? To make it memorable and to make it stick and to make people also trust you and like you.
Yeah.
Will the willingness to listen to you. So I can only imagine that would be the number one reason for hiring. And great. Hey, and then you started, but then you had to do the real work.
Yeah.
So nice signing the contract, but then you have to start.
Yeah.
Completely new thing, sort of blank slate. And then how does that work for you? You didn't have to, what works for you? How do you do that?
I just dive in. I have become, and this is like, I call it my Pippi Longcows or Pippi Longstockings mindset. I've never done it before, so I think I can do it. But I've built a muscle of being comfortable with discomfort and being comfortable with not knowing everything, and that is okay, because I trust my brain and my capability of learning new things. So I've made so many career switches, like also every role that I've had at Mendix, I'm in my fifth, every role has been different. And at some point you just go like, okay, this is new, but
different is non-logical next step. Different. That's what you mean. Eh?
Yeah, like
so
new skill sets.
Coming from junior to medium to senior to senior. No, it's really something different.
Yeah, like a horizontal move. Different roles, different responsibilities. Yeah. And with everything, I just accept that the first couple of weeks, I'm going to be stressed. I'm going to have self-doubt. I am going to question the, did I make the right decision, da, 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 all of that. And I know that at some point will also, start going away, that feeling.
Do you miss that feeling when it starts getting away? Because I think you kind of like, there's something happening inside in your eyes when you're talking about it. And I'm like, you're liking that part too much. There is something in that discomfort, in that uncertainty and unknown, at times unknown, kind of situation where you put yourself in, because nobody's forcing you. You put yourself up to the test and then you have to do it. Yes, let's do it. But I think you like that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I think I have fully embraced the unlimited growth mindset to the point where if I don't have the feeling that I'm learning, I feel like I'm running backwards, basically. And I've always been like that. I remember someone once told me, Simone, there are people that at a traffic light, they stop at orange, and you are the kind of person that just runs through red. I don't do this in real life.
If people say, hey, I'm a person, a long time ago, a former employer said to me, hey, Michiel, I'm a man of the front door. I'm really straightforward. If people say you are or you don't do something, normally it's the other way around. Eh?
Well, I am a law-abiding citizen. So in my car, I am well-behaved. But in every other aspect of life...
let's check the brand new car and the history and then see if it's true. No, but and then... so you do it anyway?
Yeah.
And you will figure it out. What helps you to calm down and figure it out? Because, of course, you like the thrill. On the other hand, it's uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
And Journeys of Empowerment is also about how do we deal with the discomfort which is happening in our mind, in our body.
Yeah. It's hard work. I'm not going to lie about that. Especially when you're just starting a new role or you're building a new skill that takes... an investment, right? So it's effort. So it's hard work. I remember when I just started coding, I would dream in code and I would call Niels in the morning and say like, hey, I had this dream. Do you think this would work? And then he would explain to me how we could actually make it work. And when I just started training Mendix, like our microflows, that's the logic that you build in Mendix, are blue blocks. I was dreaming in blue blocks. So there's a lot that happens in my sleep or in the sort of downtime when I'm just like the brain keeps going. So that, I am also very okay. And I would encourage everyone to adopt that, like with just asking questions. It is okay to say, I don't know that yet. Can you explain that to me? And especially when people know that you are new in a role or you're taking on new responsibilities, right? Like they know that you are stretching at the moment, that that is a stretch goal for you. Anyone who is a good leader will see you asking questions as a positive thing.
Yes.
And will gladly help you and answer that question.
Fully agree with that one. And I think acting as a know-it-all keeps you from the real learning.
Yeah.
And the deep learning.
Yeah.
And so you're at Mendix training, and then what was the next? What was the next step?
The next step was app delivery manager at our internal app factory. So I think I did the tech training for about 3.5 years, and there wasn't really that much for me to learn anymore, unless I wanted like to become a specialist and really do a technical deep dive, and I didn't. And at that time, we had a new department starting up that was announced. Internal App Factory that would start creating Mendix apps built with Mendix for Mendix business units to help their digital transformation. I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And first I had the idea, like, what if I joined that? Because I hadn't really put it all like together in my mind yet, what I actually wanted to do. I like we spoke earlier about how you are a process guy, like you map out your plan. Mm-hmm. I go on gut feeling and intuition, it doesn't always work out in the best way, but usually it does. So I knew that I wanted to do something with this app factory, but at first I approached Matthijs, like one of my favorite people in the world, a fantastic leader. And he was going to lead the app factory and said, hey, can I like join your team for 2 days a week to learn more like Mendix skills, project skills, which I can then use for technical training. And he said, yeah, have a conversation with your manager. He was on a holiday trip at the time. So I had like 2 weeks to think about it. And then at night I was at home and I thought, oh no, I had the wrong conversation. I don't want to work like 2 days a week and stay in tech training. I want to do something completely different. So the next day I call Matthijs in the morning. I said, hey, can we have a do-over? Because we had the wrong conversation. And he was like, yeah, sure. Like, I'm at the office. Come find me. And I had a talk with him like, listen, I don't want to join your team part-time. I want to be like full-time. And this is what I want to do. And I painted a picture of like, you are going to need someone that introduces an agile way of working. I'm a certified Scrum Master. You are going to need someone that guides the intake process for like all those business units on what they want to have built. So I don't want to build it, but I want to guide that part. And I think you need someone like that. And I can be that.
I can see you doing that. I like this.
Yeah. And Matthijs said, okay.
Was no even an option for you?
No. He said, I will have a conversation with our CIO. And I think the next day or something, he said, yes, we can offer you the position app delivery manager, but have a think about it. Like you have 2 weeks until David comes back. You think about it. And I remember, I think this was by now Friday. Friday afternoon was our Freimibo, so our Freitagmiddagborrel, mm-hmm. Friday afternoon drinks. I had a conversation with someone else. I was like, I feel like this is a test. And like, I don't want to wait 2 weeks. And Matthijs actually tells this story now whenever he's talking about hiring people and whatnot. I call him Friday afternoon. I said, Matthijs, are you busy? He said, well, I'm barbecuing, but what do you need? I said, fuck you. I don't want to wait 2 weeks. Like, I want to work for you. I don't have to think about it. Like, no. And he was like, okay, deal. You can come work for me. Obviously, we have a very good relationship.
Yeah, like, that of I course, can, that you can say. No, but I love this. I love that it's also allowing... So it's a compliment for Matthijs, who I don't know, but allowing you to be who you are.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. And I think in general, like, that is something that Mendix as a company has been really good at. Like, you said I'm a rebel with a cause. They have allowed me to be authentically me, which is definitely a little bit rebellious.
To develop maybe a little bit more, develop the rebelliousness.
yeah, probably. Because I remember when I started as a tech trainer, 2 months in, I had like this panic attack, and I went to my manager at the time and said, I think I made a mistake. This company is so corporate, which is really funny because we were like 150 people at the time. We're now 1,500 and a part of like Siemens, which is 300,000 people. So I knew nothing about corporate, but to me, it felt corporate. And I said, like, it feels like a straitjacket, and like, I don't know if this is me. And then my manager said, listen, we hired you because of who you are. We don't want you to fit in our world. We want you to be you and bring what you have to the table. And I sort of embraced that. And I think, I mean, yeah, people can't see me, but I have quite some tattoos. I walk around the office like just sleeveless, and people can see my arms, and I don't hide who I am. We have a Mendix band as well. I'm the lead singer of that band.
Of course.
I've been for 8 years. So for 8 years already, every party that we have at the office, like the Mendix band is playing, and I'm standing there on stage singing mostly... somewhat inappropriate, probably rock and pop songs, and screaming at the top of my lungs that people need to jump.
I believe there are recordings of this, right?
Probably somewhere, yeah.
It would be great if we can a little bit fuse it a little bit into this episode. So, are you willing to share a little song you saw in this episode? A little bit.
I can see if I can find something.
Right,
if
so
I
we will blend it a little in this and then fade it out.
Yeah.
But that people have a grasp of also your rebellious singing career.
Yeah, but yeah. So I can't think of like. Any part of me that I hide at work.
That's a beautiful environment, I think.
Yeah, which is also why I'm still there after 10 years.
After 10 years. Fast forward, we had a conversation around COVID, and that was really a sort of, for a lot of people, for me too, sort of pivotal moment, also career-wise, because there... You became also responsible for the HR part or the people and culture part within your role. And also something interesting about empath. Yeah, so maybe can you elaborate a little bit on that? And then I have a lot of questions about why you're doing what you're doing, but we're creating a picture of you in what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
But I think this is an essential part to also share with our audience.
I will gladly share it. Yeah, so it was COVID time. I had been in the app delivery management role for about 2 years. And there was a shout out from our CEO to the organization. Hey, like, we're starting an incubator program. If you have an idea for a solution that we can build with Mendix and monetize, pitch it to MT, and then we'll see if we can create a business unit around it. And I thought to myself at this point, like, I had seen our app factory grow from just a handful of people to 60 people in only 2 years. And a large part of that was, like, during COVID time that those people were added. to our team, and they were onboarded like completely virtually. They'd never met each other. And I thought to myself, like, I feel so at home at this company. Again, like being authentically me, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a purpose here, and I know what value I add, and I have connections. And it must be so hard for people to find all of that. Also recognizing that that is something different for everyone, right? Mm-hmm. Not everyone wants to be on stage with a band.
No.
But people want to find purpose and belonging. Like that, I think, is universal. And I thought, what if we can build something that helps people find that, to help them find their spot within this organization so they feel at home and they feel seen and valued? And so I proposed building an employee experience suite to MT, which we called Empath, which stands for empathy, the employee's path. And they said, okay, come to our people and culture department. They offered me a position as head of HR technology. Later on, I added operations to that as well. And like build out this suite. And then at the same time, like focus on the rest of the digital transformation of our people, tech, etc. And so I moved from like hardcore tech to people and culture. I remember I called my mom at the time, like, hey, I have a new job. And she said, oh, it's been 2 years. Yeah, she was like, it took you long enough.
Yeah.
There's a pattern. And yeah, I joined our people and culture team. And it was, at the same time, one of the most valuable, like from a learning perspective, experiences of my life, as well as one of the hardest times professionally that I have ever had to endure.
That makes me curious. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the learning part as well as on the hardest? Why it was the hardest? So first the learning. What was for you the steepest learning?
Well, I think that goes hand in hand, right? So I think the first 6 months were fine. That was just tech. And then my manager at the time, our chief people officer, she said, hey, can you take on the operations team as well? So this is HR administration. And she said, you don't have to learn anything about HR. That team is running smoothly. I just want you to take on that team and see where, with automation, with technology, we can make certain things more efficient. I was like, okay, I've done that before.
That
like,
I can do.
That I can do. I'll take on this team. It wasn't necessarily true. Let's put it that way. It was quite messy. And I found myself, some people called in sick because they were burning out. I found myself having to learn all about HR, labor law, the systems, everything, covering three positions at the same time. And I was basically working, I don't know, 15, 16 hours a day. And I also found out that I didn't necessarily like HR. Like I love tech, benefits and policies. It just does not get me excited. And I get excited about a lot of things. So that says something. And it just drained my battery completely to the point where I started burning out. And I never stopped working. Mm. I did go back to like 40 hours a week. But I was just getting this team like back on track, and I felt like if we're just getting things back on track, if I call in sick now, like when I get back, we can start all over again. And I didn't want to do that, so I pushed through.
Or went far over your boundaries.
Yeah, yes, and I think that was also one of the big lessons is I have boundaries, and I never saw myself as a person who had boundaries before that.
Of course not.
No.
The whole world, except you. Sounds logical, right?
Yeah.
In your world.
Superwoman.
Well, then I agree. But there you met your boundaries.
Yes. Yeah. And like I said, again, I pushed through, which is not something I'm like advertising for, right? It's not something I would recommend. I think this comes back from my childhood. Like I grew up with a father who was sick. So my dad was diagnosed with cancer when I was 12. He was sick for almost 13 years and he passed away when I was 24. And all that time, like the message at home was, yes, it's okay to be sad, but it's not okay to not keep going. Like you have to go to school. You still have to get good grades. I was doing gymnasium, so the highest level of education in the Netherlands. And there was a lot of pressure, especially from my dad, to keep going. And I think growing up in an environment like that has instilled a drive in me, or a feeling of there is no option to stop. There is no option to take it easy. And so I pushed through and I lost a lot of weight. I lost a lot of hair. It was literally falling out like a handful at a time whenever I washed my hair. So it was definitely, and it took me also like quite some time before I could start admitting that I'd actually burned out. I always said like, oh, I think I got pretty close to a burnout until I discussed it with a doctor. And she was like, haha, that's cute. You think you got really close to a burnout? I would start saying like, you burned out. Like massively. Do you have any idea like the amounts of stress your body have like must have been under for that to happen to your hair? But I made it through. It also made me realize that I think at one point I was back at 70% battery wise, and I just had that realization: if I stay in this role, I will never get back to 100, and probably I'll start like draining the battery again, because I just don't like HR.
You didn't like the, it wasn't aligned with what you value, right?
No, it's...
It's not necessarily about HR, but it's not aligned with who you are and what you value.
It wasn't a puzzle.
No.
It was just like routine. And there wasn't a lot of tech. Mm. And you asked me at start, like, are you a techie?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that experience is what makes me always say wholeheartedly yes.
Yes.
Because the minute I move away from tech, I become very unhappy. Mm. And it's just that sort of calling that I have almost.
But you have also a drivenness in you. So how easy is it to admit to yourself that you may be not on the right path? And go to your manager and have a conversation. How easy does that go for you, work for you? Knowing that you're so driven. And so I have to do this and I have to keep going.
Yeah, that was hard. Mm. It was hard. I think my saving grace back then was that my actual manager went on maternity leave. And I had our CEO as my stand-in manager. And I had a check-in with him. And I'm so grateful for this conversation to this day. And he asked me, because I was doing like an INSEAD program and like there was some coaching there from your manager. And instead of talking about that, he just asked me like, hey, how are you? And how do you see your future at our organization? And
great question.
Yeah.
Perfect timed.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to be honest. So I told him like, well, to be honest, I don't know. This role is not what we said it would be. And I get that. We're not investing in new tech we're people tech right now with the economy, right? I think like Russia, Ukraine just started. Mm-hmm. It was not a time for making big investments in HR tech. And I said, as a professional, I totally understand that. But that makes me just an HR operations manager. And that was supposed to be my side gig. And that was never the job that I really wanted. And I don't see a way out. But I do know that I don't want to be here. And our CEO, Tim, he said, well, go find what you want to do. And we brainstormed it a little bit. He said, go have conversations with people in the organization. Find what you want. Come back to me. We'll make it happen. And so I did.
For the people who are listening and in this kind of position, figure out what to learn to adopt this kind of mindset and asking the right questions at the right time. And being able to create a space and an environment where people thrive, and if they don't, they dare to speak up.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine it's not easy to have that conversation, especially not with the CEO. And yet, you did.
Yes. Yeah, because I also felt that I didn't really have anything to lose at that point. And, like, well.
And maybe not even to prove.
Yeah.
At that point, right?
Yeah.
Happy that you did that. And then what? What did you find?
So I ended up as a digital transformation evangelist.
Digital transformation evangelist. Holy.
the actual job title is even longer and more complicated.
Okay, this is for me complicated enough.
But yeah, so taking the learnings that I had from our App Factory and from the time at People and Culture, right, that was all basically around digital transformation.
Yeah.
But digital transformation for Mendix. I took on this job to start sharing that knowledge with our customers. So to go out on stages and talk about how you do transformation the right way, digital transformation, and creating masterclasses on that topic, which was a lot of fun. I think one of my, I still have to pinch myself. I was looking back at this keynote this morning, actually, because I got to deliver a keynote at the Red Bull Racing headquarters on stage, surrounded by all the like cars from like, well, the championship, the first championship car from Max, all the way back to the first RB. And I am a massive Formula One fan, so I was like, oh, I get to be here.
This is your spot.
Yeah.
This is your chance.
Yeah. So I delivered a keynote there on stage. It was absolutely an amazing experience. And I think a lot of my, like you spoke about drive, right? Uh-huh. Like a lot of my drive, I think also comes from my childhood and having a father who not necessarily motivated me in the healthiest way always, because he was very concerned that I would give up, right? We spoke about that sort of like you just pushed through. He motivated me to push through with negativity, basically saying like, you'll never amount to anything. You'll end up like as a cashier somewhere. You are nothing, but trouble, basically. And I've always had this sort of drive, especially after he passed away, of proving him wrong. And because he's not here anymore, like I also don't get that sort of
acknowledgement
of yes, now I'm finally proud of you. But like standing there on stage at Red Bull, because he was a really big Formula One fan.
You felt it, right?
Yeah, and it was actually a really emotional moment. And I shared it with my audience as well. Like this is such a like big moment for me to be here, not just as me as a fan of all of this, but knowing that my dad would have loved this. Like he would have been jealous. He probably would have disowned me if I couldn't have like taken him with me to the headquarters. But he would have loved that, and he would have been so proud.
What made you feel so safe to also share this to the audience? Because it wasn't about a very personal, it wasn't a personal story, right?
Yeah.
That in that keynote.
No.
So what, how did you make the jump? How did you do that?
It was in my opening words.
Of course, just in the opening already.
And I felt like I needed to do it. It was because I was like high in my emotions at that moment, and I felt like I needed to acknowledge it and verbalize it. Yeah, to
and diffuse it a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Happy that you did it. Yeah, but that's interesting. Okay. But still, you did it.
Yeah.
So what helps you at that moment to feel the tension inside of you? That's interesting to unpack. You could have easily, not easily, but suppress it and just not say it and push through because you think, yeah, the audience is expecting some kind of presentation. So what helps you to to just do that?
Good question. I think I have learned through like healing from burnout, the power of not suppressing emotions and just allowing yourself to feel things. And that is a much healthier choice. Like, I think I became healthier as a person because I had a burnout, because like I always suppressed everything. I was just that person just kept on going endlessly, right? I had no boundaries. And I think that period where I had to make a conscious choice of how am I going to deal with this? Am I going to escape into partying or whatever, which I didn't really have the energy for, like, to begin with, but I made a very conscious decision, like, no, I'm not going to do any escape behavior. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to sit with everything that I'm feeling and I'm just going to process it. And I think that gave me a much healthier relationship with trauma, with emotions, and just that feeling that it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to feel things, even if it's positive, right? Like, all of that deserves to be here and makes me me. And I think one thing is very important when I'm on stage or like now here talking with you, I am me authentically, and that's what people connect with.
Yes.
So I didn't want to be there on stage and suppress
a part of you, no, inside of you, which it brings a lot of tension.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's also in your mind distracting.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, what if I like quiver, or what if I don't know, tear up? I was like, no, we're gonna get the emotional stuff out. Like,
how did the people respond?
Very well. I mean, I felt like I started with a joke, put this in, and then put a joke after it again. Several people reached out to the people like in our team afterwards that they thought that my keynote was such a highlight for them, a highlight of the day, but also in general, that they really, really connected with what I was sharing, which was a lot of knowledge. I mean, it's a serious talk. It's about digital transformation.
Yeah, of course. That's why I thought, like, hey, but what helped you to make the jump first? All right, at the beginning also. And then before you start, you make that jump. What helped you? And that made me utterly curious. So I couldn't imagine a serious keynote and then such an openness and vulnerability. I think it's in the allowing and accepting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of your newest superpowers, to allow.
I think so.
Allow yourself.
Yeah. I've always been very good at allowing others.
Yeah.
Because that's easy. But yeah, now I allow myself.
And sitting with the discomfort.
Yeah.
Impressive. Impressive. And now over to the rebellious part.
Yes.
Where does that come from?
The
drivenness is very clear.
Yeah.
And where that comes from. And although it's not all been nurtured in a quite nice way, it's still is deep inside you and it fuels you.
Yeah.
But where does that rebelliousness come from? And what are you rebellious of for? Advocating for?
So I think there's a couple of things, right? So part of it is definitely DNA.
That's too easy.
I mean, my
all
dad.
Right, how much? What percentage?
I don't know, but my dad was definitely a bit of a rebel, and some of my uncles are definitely like a bit rebellious. So there's definitely a family streak here. I think that also comes from having ADHD. So I'm just a little bit of a restless, outgoing, speak before you think person. and yeah, just, I don't know, being the youngest, smallest, smartest kid in school isn't always the safest environment, I guess. Also being neurodivergent. I was bullied as a kid, and I just remember that moment where I thought, like, you can all just like I don't want to swear again. I already swore it once, but another F-bomb was about to drop. And I'm just going to be me, and I will do zero apologies for that. And then throughout my career, experiencing what it's like to be a woman in tech, it's not always the easiest job to be in as a woman. No, I've definitely had encountered my fair share of sexism. Mm. And I think that's where a large part of that rebelliousness comes from as well, challenging that status quo and not accepting, you can think whatever you want of me and you can doubt what I'm capable of, but I know what I'm capable of and I will show you. And not just that,
I believe you.
But not just that, I want to make the world a better place for women. And I have a lot of passion for also the neurodivergency topic, of course, as a neurodivergent individual, and for LGBTIAQ+ rights. Mm-hmm. All of that is very important to me, but logically I resonate the most with the topic of women in tech. And I fully appreciate that I'm just a tiny cog in a very, very big wheel for multiple wheels system. But anything that I can do to help or inspire women that are younger than me, that are starting out their career in tech, that is something worth fighting for. To make it easier for them than it was for me. So I think that's where that rebelliousness always comes from as well. That drive to, I don't know, to add something of value to the world beyond my own life.
And what are you doing with that rebelliousness? Because if you don't do something with it, you're becoming a bomb. I can believe.
Yeah.
I have to do something.
So a lot of my energy I can just take out at work, right? I love my job. I feel like I'm challenging the status quo there, regularly. I'm always pushing the boundaries of, let's try this, or why are we doing it like this?
Boundaries? There are no boundaries. What are we talking about? Limits? Why?
Yeah. Sky is the limit.
Yeah, and not even that.
Yeah. But I try to support a lot of networks as well. So we have the local ladies community that I supported in starting up. There's the Rotterdam Women in Tech community. Mira Vasic, who is female leadership coach, amazing woman. She's starting up a community for expats in the Netherlands. And I try to support initiatives like that, either through coaching or through delivering a keynote or helping set up some technology. And through that, I hope to do my humble part in reaching out to other women. And I guess the core message that I hope to send out to people is you don't have to be defined by anything other than your own dreams and ambitions. Your history, your life, your trauma, nothing of that has to define where you are going to be in life, and also not what other people think you are capable of or how they see you. None of that has to define you. You get to decide where you go. And that's what I do.
If time and money and if there were no limits, of course, in your world, there are no limits. I know now a little bit. I'm learning fast. But if there was no limit in time, in effort, you can put in something which will help the world forward, what would it be?
I don't think there's one answer to that, especially because you gave me unlimited resources. So I care a lot about human rights topics. I care a lot about the environment. So I would definitely do something for our oceans. I'm a diver. I love diving. So oceans are important. I've had this dream since I was young of starting like a big shelter for like ugly, unwanted, sick, old animals to just like give them. Yeah, I know. I'm a real softie. I talk a big talk, but I'm a real softie at heart. To just give them a safe space. But I think most importantly, and also seeing where the world is going, like it's a scary time to be a woman. I would invest like so much into empowerment for women, teaching, like we had that conversation about what you're doing, right? Teaching young women technology skills so they can create a better future for themselves if they come from, hard environments or countries maybe where it's not that vanzelfsprekend, how do I say that in English?
Not a given.
That you get to have an education or that you get to have a career or that you get to have freedom to help women like that, to even if it's just a little bit of autonomy and freedom, I think that would be beautiful.
I think so too. I think the world needs that.
Yeah.
More autonomy, mastery and purpose.
Yeah.
And alignment in that. I'm not preaching for my own company, but I believe in that too. And if we look back, Simone, and what would be one advice to the, let's say, 10-year younger you, with all the lived experience of now, what would it be?
I would tell myself it's going to be okay. Like there was a large part of in my life where I didn't think that I was ever going to be happy, that I was ever going to actually enjoy life. So I would probably tell myself like, you are whispering to yourself at night now, like, oh, I hope, like, I don't want to give up. I want to believe in what other people say, that it will get better. I would love to tell myself that, like, yes, it actually will get better. And that feeling that you have of being a screw up that's never going to live up to their potential because your brain doesn't always want to do what you want it to do. Like, that's not going to last. Like, you're going to find your path and what you're good at, and you're going to find your ways of working with who you are and how your brain works. Never stop dreaming. Dreaming big. And just do you.
I think this is a beautiful, beautiful piece of advice for a lot of us. Thank you for sharing. Maybe one question. If there would be a law you can implement in the world you would love to see, what would that law be?
That would be universal access to education and healthcare, voting, freedom for women.
Amen to that.
Yeah, don't have to think a second about that one.
No, it really comes from deep within.
Yeah.
If people, what would be opportunities on stage you would love to be invited for? Because I would love to see a lot more about you on stage.
Oh, thanks.
There's so much energy in you and this. But what would be the ideal sort of opportunities to, without doing any assumptions, of course, based on our conversation, a pre-video conversation we had, I can imagine something, but what would you love to talk about? So, besides tech?
Yes.
Or including tech, maybe, but...
We can always talk about tech. But what I would love to be invited for is, I've written a keynote basically about my story, and embracing an unlimited growth mindset, or that Pippi Longhouse mindset, And talking about that on stage, sharing like the discomfort that you can work through and taking small steps, building a muscle for being comfortable with discomfort and like taking small steps to a deep dive or just like that big leap of faith into what might be your next beautiful opportunity. I saw this LinkedIn, well, it was on LinkedIn. It was a video interview with Viola Davis, mm-hmm. who I adore. And she said something along the lines of, everything you've ever dreamed of is on the other side of fear.
Wow.
Yes. And that resonates so strongly
with me.
That really
stops you in your tracks, right?
Yeah.
Because you really have to think, okay, on the other side of your fear.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You dream a lot, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it's that feeling, like you asked me before, like what drives you or yeah. like...
Yeah, there's so much fuel in you.
Yeah.
There's so much fire.
But also that feeling of like when I'm a little bit scared mm-hmm. of can I do this? That's when I actually nowadays think, oh, that means I'm onto something. Like if I feel scared or a little bit uncomfortable, that means that I'm learning something or I'm doing something that is like pushing me outside of my boundaries a little bit. And that is by definition exciting. So I sort of equate that nervousness with, ooh, let's go.
Yeah.
This is like something big. And so that's what I talk about, how you can learn to embrace that feeling to pivot your career or to build a really healthy team environment where there's room for learning and growth. So yeah, if people want to hear about that, then please invite me.
All right, I will for sure put your LinkedIn. People can reach out via LinkedIn, I guess.
Yeah.
Do we have an own website?
No. For,
there people can, okay, but people can reach out via LinkedIn. And is there some footage to find about you on stage?
Well, there is on my LinkedIn. You'll find like some interviews that I have done with other people or people who have interviewed me. I'm actually working this week on an outtake of like a little highlights of that Red Bull keynote.
Cool. So you're going to share some of it.
Yes. Beautiful. That's a different story because that's a digital transformation story, but at least you get to see me
on
stage.
Are you going to share the first part in the beginning?
Yes.
Sharing the discomfort feeling and sharing that with a broad audience?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. No pressure. No, I would love to because that makes you, right?
Yeah.
That's really a superpower. If you are in front of and you are very into Formula One, you are in the house of Red Bull and then sharing the discomfort at that moment and the tension. Simone, this is what the world needs.
Yeah.
Of course we need tech. And of course, and so forth and so on. And of course, I can imagine an amazing keynote. But that first part, that's what Journeys of Empowerment is all about. Sharing our vulnerability, being open. It makes you.
Yeah. And it allows other people to be themselves as well, right? Like if I'm vulnerable, that gives you freedom, hopefully, to be vulnerable as well. And if I show up as authentically me, hopefully that gives you that same sense of freedom to show up as authentically you. And if everyone would live like that, I think we would have a much better world.
There's still one question which is sort of bothering me in my head. And it grew along our conversation. And I am going to ask, and you, of course you're free to say, Michiel, I understand your question, but I don't want to answer or I don't have an answer. But it's what pops up is how much of your drivenness now is really yours?
I think it's more mine than it ever has been. I look at it more as a game nowadays. So first, it was all like you have to prove to the world that you are worth something. I am very comfortable with like the knowledge that I have proven my worth. Of course, there are people that are way more successful than I am, right? I mean,
it depends on the definition of success.
True, true. But if it comes from like claim to fame or the startups or the big companies, whatever, there are so many names out there that like are huge. But I have proven myself that I am a smart and also just a like good human being that tries to make the world a better place. And I think now the drive is just like, I want to see how far I can go.
Okay, that's good.
And it's not a need anymore, but it's fun.
Healthy fun.
Healthy fun, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for answering this question. But I had to ask it because...
Yeah, of course.
Knowing your... trying to understand a little bit and knowing your background and what fuels it and what was the starting point and childhood, and we all carry that. And where does that come? Is it nurture? Is it nature? Is it really you? Is it really who we are? Or is it still trying to prove something which... The starting point is in my background, in my childhood.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Simone, we can talk for hours, for sure. For now, I would leave us with one last question, and it is, if somebody is listening to our conversation and have the same kind of feeling of, I have to prove myself, and if I prove myself, I'm there, I'm worthy, I can maybe see. What would you advise that person?
It maybe sounds like hypocritical, because I did not do this for myself. But I would advise to let go of that, like try to let go of that. Especially if like the person or the thing that you're looking for validation from is not around anymore, you will never reach it unless you find it within yourself. So yes, it's okay to have a drive, but self-worth comes from self-love. And from just looking at what you have achieved already. And of course, like I would like applaud anyone who wants to like keep growing, right? I think growing is a beautiful thing, and it's okay to have goals. It's not okay to not feel like you are not worthy if you haven't reached a certain goal. So always keep looking back, reflecting back on all the, even if it's just little successes, right? 10 little successes are also something to be celebrated. So always look back at what you've already achieved, and take pride in that and celebrate yourself.
Thank you very much. I'm getting emotional. Oh.
Thank you.
No, but beautiful, beautiful. And it's not hypocritical. Because you now acknowledge by saying that you are learning to also apply it for yourself, right?
Sure, it was a learning process for me, definitely, yeah.
Simone, thank you very much.
Thank you, Michiel.
And yeah, emotional voice. No, but thank you very much. And looking forward to follow you and seeing you live on stage. I think it's going to be a party of energy for sure.
Yes, yes. And thank you for having me here. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.